You are listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball, a podcast by fans from the iubase.com website for anyone wanting more info on Indiana University baseball. Today is Tuesday, April 30th, 2019. I am Carl James, joined by stats guru Cassidy Palmer, the man who can juggle two different groups of kids playing ball behind right field, Chris Feeney, and the creator of iubase.com, Josh Bennett. The number 23 Hoosiers climbed four spots in the D1 baseball poll this week to finish to number 19 after a 3-1 week, including series win at home against Minnesota, and celebrating the conclusion of a 9-0 sweep of Indiana teams with Coach Z ringing in the victory bell at Victory Field in Indianapolis a week ago Tuesday. The Minnesota series got off to a familiar start for a Big Ten series. Minnesota's Max Meyer got the ball on Friday, and with an off-speed heavy mix, kept the Hoosiers at bay. The Hoosiers' plan of running up Meyer's pitch count seemed to be working, but the coach from Minnesota countered by simply not taking Meyer out until his pitch count was well over 120. As a result, the Hoosiers were unable to score enough and dropped the series opener. Saturday even looked even bleaker as Minnesota continued the strategy of off-speed heavy pitching and built up a 6-1 lead. A Ryan Feinman two-run bomb made it a game again, but the Hoosiers were still down three going into the ninth. Grant Richardson led off with a solo shot to cut the lead to two, but by the time Drew Ashley came to the plate, there were two outs and nobody on. Ashley and Gorski walked to set up one of the greatest Hoosier highlights I have ever witnessed. Matt Lloyd works a 3-2 count before launching a no-doubt bomb over the right field fence to save the series.
Matt Lloyd hadn't had a great series to this point, but every single at bat, every pitch of every game, he's the most competitive, the toughest, and the most accountable guy out there. He doesn't dodge it. He doesn't dodge responsibility. He goes out and he works his butt off every day and gives himself a chance to succeed and gives us a chance to succeed.
The rubber match was a different story altogether, but common for Hoosier Sundays. Andrew Saulfrank got another solid start in, and the Hoosier bats provided an early lead and a big series-clinching win. I already gave out the highlight of the week, but there were still others. Cass, what is your highlight?
I'm going to go with Tommy Sumner striking out the side in the ninth inning in game two. That ended up being pretty darn big. You allow any runs, even just one run, and it goes to extras, more than one run, and maybe lose. So to me, that paired up with the Matt Lloyd home run very well. So I'm going to go with the Tommy Sumner ninth inning there. So Josh, what's your highlight?
Thanks, Cass. Like Carl said in the recap, there's one moment that definitely has to take the cake, and I want to talk about that for a second. But first, I think that Elijah Dunham deserves a shout-out for his home run at Victory Field, an absolute no-doubter. And also Matt Gorski for the catch he made in the gap later in that game off the bat. Looked like an easy double or maybe even a triple as big as that park is. But he got an amazing jump on it and covered an insane amount of ground. But the highlight has to be Saturday. Wow. Minnesota's owned us for the last 2 years, and it looked like that trend was going to continue after the 7-3 beating Friday night and a 6-1 hole going into the bottom of the seventh on Saturday with absolutely zero momentum. Drew Ashley led the game off with a single, and then Scotty Bradley had a double in the sixth. That was it. Two hits up until that point. The first 15 innings were dominated by Minnesota. Then Dunham and Feinman provided a little spark in the seventh to get the ball rolling. But still down three going into the ninth. Grant showed that Schultz was vulnerable when he jumped on that first pitch to drive one over the center field fence. But then the next 2K, you're down two runs, two outs, no base runners. Drew and Matt then take a unselfish, patient approach and pass the baton. You know, they draw walks to set up a chance for a huge moment, and Lloyd absolutely delivered. Then they ride that momentum to jump out early and cruise to victory on Sunday to secure the series. That at bat could absolutely be a season-defining moment. So, Chris, what highlight do you have this week on both the former and future Hoosiers?
All right. Thanks, Josh. I really – just listening to you talk about it, you get the chills, man, standing out there in an outfield. That thing was What a moment. But it was a really, overall, really, really big Saturday for Hoosier baseball, obviously on the field with the Matt Lloyd epic shot, but also on the high school ranks. All in one day, Josh Pine, he played a doubleheader on Saturday, went 6-for-7 and hit 3 home runs. The first game, he was 3-for-3 with 2 bombs, a double and 4 RBIs. Then in his second game, he goes 3-for-4. They finally did get him out, and he hit another home run. So that was all Saturday. Now, in his second game, Josh Pine's team was playing Edgewood, right? So it was Linton versus Edgewood. So that also played Ethan Vakrumba into the mix. He hits 2 home runs in that game, a 3-run bomb and a 2-run bomb. So all this is going on Saturday while we're just getting shellacked until the 7th inning, and then we decide to go on the home run barrage. So it was pretty wild. There was also a big pitching performance on Saturday from the high school ranks. Casper Clark, 7 innings, 1 hit, 12 Ks, no runs. So he's a big-time pitcher. We talked about him before with Columbus North. And I was on Twitter before we just started, and he drove in the first 2 runs of the game for Columbus North. I guess he can hit a little, too. Now, for the alumni on Saturday, a little bit more towards the evening, still Saturday, though, Kyle Schwarber went 2-for-4 with 2 doubles. And his, you know, he's having a poor, a little bit of a streak going, you know, not the best with hitting for Kyle, especially from what we're used to. So that was a big day for him. Again on Saturday, Alex Dickerson, 2-for-5 with a home run. And that made his average in the last 10 games, 4-10. And that's thanks to Pro Bowl Hoosiers. He let us know about that. But the ultimate highlight, I got to say, for the alumni for the week is Kyle Hart. Okay, he threw 6.2 innings pitched of no-hit ball, just 1 walk and 6 Ks. And then his relievers came in for the Portland Sea Dogs and completed the no-hitter. So it was a combined no-hitter for Portland. Kyle obviously was the starter. His pitch count was at 96, though. So he obviously wasn't going to finish the game. So they pulled him when they did. And, you know, he's the ultimate alumni highlight, I'd say, for the week. But plenty of high school stuff. What a Saturday. For that comeback for Matt and for all this going on at the same time, it was a big-time Hoosier Saturday.
Very cool, Chris. Well, with 3 weeks on the week, 3 wins on the week, there was a lot of standout play. So, Chris, for the Hoosiers, who earned this week's red belt?
All right. Thanks, Carl. A lot of choices this week. There really was. I would say, though, for pitching, it's a 2-appearance performance red belt for Connor Maness. Okay? For Victory Field, he goes 3 innings. He faces 10 batters, strikes out half of them. You know, he gets 5 Ks there. Then he comes back in on Sunday for 2 2/3, faces 8 batters, strikes out half of them for 4 more Ks. So he struck out half the guys he faced in the 2 appearances between Victory Field and Sunday. And in Victory Field, he was really, I thought he was even more dominant. Hit some real sharp stuff. But you know what? Sunday is just as important. We were up, I believe it was 6-1 in the 7th, right? Well, we know what that can happen. Yeah, we were down 6-1 in the 7th the day before. If your relievers can't get the job done and hold the lead, you end up partying in the outfield for the walk-off, right? So kind of took care of that. That was big-time stuff. Matt Gorski is going to go for the defensive red belt. Josh touched on it. The ball the guy hit in Victory Field was heading to the gap, double, triple. Who knows where it was going? We had a 1-run game. And I've seen the video, and I still don't feel that it gives him enough credit. From where he was positioned to where he got. And Matt's not that much of an emotional guy. I feel like he's pretty cool, calm, and collected most of the time. He got to that ball. He started pumping his hands. He knew what he did. That was a big-time catch for Matt. So he's going to get the Tony Butler red belt. So we got Connor Maness for pitching. We got Matt Gorski for defense. And one of the most obvious Alex Dickerson Award red belts in any season, I feel like. Matt Lloyd is obviously getting the Alex Dickerson red belt for this one. Now,
you've got mail. You've got mail. You've got mail. You've got mail.
You've got mail. Carl, I gotta give Matt a shout-out here as well as red belt because – it's amazing. I'm gonna cut the mail real quick.
Okay.
This guy is leading the Hoosiers in average 317, total bases 105, slugging percentage 652, walks 27, RBIs 45, and doubles 12. So I wanted to get that out with his red belt. Matt Lloyd has been Mr. Everything. Okay, mail.
All right.
You've got mail. You've got mail. You've got mail.
It came back again.
You've got mail. You've got mail.
Okay. Well, it is mailbag time. We have one question this week, and the entire panel is going to get a crack at it. Brent Tonsoni asks, where does Saturday's Matt Lloyd walk-off rank in each of your favorite moments at the BART? Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, wow, that's a great question, Brent. I know we're all going to have some fun on this one. I'm sure there'll be a little bit of repeating, but just so many great and memorable moments at the BART in the last few years, with the top one probably out of reach for anything we'll ever witness, I think. You all know what I'm referring to on that one. But the Northern Illinois game last season, where we were down and just sleepwalking through until Luke Miller and Logan Sowers go back-to-back and give us the lead in the eighth. There was the Easter Sunday game in 2016 when Tony Butler failed to get down a sack bunt. And, of course, as it always happens, he was rewarded by hitting his first home run as a Hoosier to walk off Indiana State in extra innings and kick off the Easter egg hunt, much to the enjoyment of all the youngsters itching to get out on the field. The first Stanford game in the 2014 regionals, the bleachers were packed, the rails were packed. Joey on the mound, ended up in a 4-2 win, but atmosphere wise, that one was just incredible. But two that are definitely at the top of my list were Craig Dedalo hitting his granny in the monsoon 2 years ago to shut up the USA chants for Maryland. And then last season, trailing 5-3 against Maryland again in the eighth, when Luke Miller hit his 3-run shot off their closer, John Murphy, which directly led to the next pitch sailing behind Ryan's head. The shove happened.
The seventh inning happened to that game, Josh. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah. Yes, it did happen that. And then our man Coop stepped in to get control of the situation after the shove. Yes. And Lazy Mary may have been played.
The only time. And Luke Miller made it a winner.
And I think that's also one of the only times I've heard the PA remind fans that they could be ejected. But, yeah, there are so many more.
You can't say people's names.
No, you
can't mention the players' names, apparently.
Somebody said John Murphy, hey, Murphy, or something like that, I think, is what triggered that.
Something to do with Murphy. That guy was a bum.
But, hey, there's so many more. There's no doubt this was a big one. It's comfortably in my top 10. Probably 6 to 10 range. But just so many that I didn't even mention that are in there, too. But, so that's where it ranks for me. So Cass, where is it for you?
So if I had been, I wasn't there, so it's kind of hard to judge the atmosphere on the TV. But this would probably be fringe top 5 for me. It'd be in that probably 5 to 6 range. Because for me, my top 3 up there is the Purdue rain delay comeback or lightning delay comeback. Hart's senior year, he goes out into the outfield to play center field for a little while. And that was a fun one. There were so few people left there, but it was just a very hardcore dedicated group who were yelling and screaming and going crazy. It was so much fun. The second one is that Maryland rainy grand slam by Craig Dedalo, which was actually 2 years ago today. And so that one's always going to be up there. I traveled the 12 hours round trip to be there for the Maryland series. There's the bad blood. That one's going to be up there for a while. And top one for me, got to be Chad Clark walk-off home run. Until we have something like that in a postseason situation, I don't know that anything is going to top that for a long time. My kind of honorable mention one for me was the 27-1 shellacking of Butler in 2016. That was the first game that my family from the northern end of the state came to a game. And so it was a great, great performance for them to be there, and it was a lot of fun. So, Chris, what are your rankings for moments at the BART?
Thanks, Cass. That Butler game was fun. I remember I took a picture of your scorecard, but I took it too early. It was like 16-1. And then yes. I was like, oh, I got to take it again. We just scored like 8 more. So it was funny. Mm-hmm. But for me, the Louisville game is the best game I've ever been to at the BART. I was not there in 2013. So, you know, I'm not at the Chad Clark home run game. So, obviously, that one's out for me. But that Louisville game is standalone. an amazing game. Okay. We're playing the number two team in the country. They're 46-6. We jump out to an early 4-0 lead and have to hold on for dear life for the entire night. Gorski drove in some runs. I looked it up, Fineman in that second inning. And Limo was a magician, man. He was pulling stuff out of his hat. He's changing batters in mid-count. Everybody he put in was doing their thing. And maybe it's my Met fandom or something, but, like, as every inning's going by, I'm just like, we're going to blow this. You know what I'm saying? We're not going to hold on to this. And sure enough, by the fifth, they've got three, so now it's 4-3. And I'm like, oh, there's a whole game to go here. Like, but we did it. You know, Sable, Crisco, Heron comes in, strikes out McKay. And Lloyd, actually, I mean, it was the easiest night thing. I remember being in shock. Like, I didn't think they got a guy on. I was ready for, like, bases loaded or something. And that Louisville game, to me, is the best game played in that stadium. But as far as a ball hitting a bat in a moment, the Matt Lloyd is to me, it goes above D'Lo. It goes above Miller. It goes above the other moments. You know, it was a walk-off. It ended the game. The ball's coming right at us. Like, it was crazy that we went out to that hill for good luck. And Brent calls it. That was the other crazy thing. As we're walking all the way out to the outfield, he's like, all right, here's what's going to happen. This guy's going to get on. This guy's going to strike out. And he got all the other stuff wrong. But what he got right was that Matt Lloyd will hit the ball to us and win the game. It was nuts. Brian Hobby's out there with his mom in the cheap seats. It was so much fun. So for a ball hitting the bat, like a moment, yeah, that was intense. That was for one single moment, that's mine. For a ball game, Louisville. What about you, Carl?
For me, I really do look for a single moment that you have to consider in this is Krupa's walk-off RBI single in the 2017 Big Ten tournament, which was at the BART. I remember that game clearly because I had my one of my kids had their little graduation ceremony that morning. So I couldn't make it until like the seventh inning. And I had felt the, you know, I had missed most of the game. As it turns out, I hadn't. And then you get to the, you know, and it was such a big game because Michigan was the one really high RPI team in that tournament. And I really felt Indiana needed one more good win to qualify for the postseason. So that game was critical, and obviously they lose that game. They had already lost the game before. They were gonna be out of the Big Ten tournament 0-2, and really really nervous going into Selection Monday. But Krupa gets that hit. The players had a bunch of the players in the dugout had turned their jerseys around. It had been raining, but there were, you know, the crowd was still very into it. It was a big event. He got that hit. They scored the run. They won the game. Cal Kruger was probably going to be pitching the next day, most likely as the starter. He ended up pitching five innings of great relief, but it just
he was outstanding.
Like,
oh, he was so good.
Yeah, but it was just like it was great to see this. You know, like we're going to do everything we can to win this game, to get this win. But you're nervous that it's not going to happen. But then, boom, it happens, and it's like, you know, all that that weight off the shoulders of knowing, you know, this team now has a legitimate chance is pretty much now a lock to make the postseason. And then it led, you know, to a very fun regional down in Kentucky that year. So that was a big moment for me. But you know, even still, this bomb, I think, tops that particular moment, for me. Now, for me, and I went back to this and I mentioned this last year, for you talk about a single game, but I think the Cal State Fullerton series in 2015 was one of the best times I ever had at the BART. And it was that whole series. You beat their stud Friday guy, and they do it through little slap hits and finding ways to get hits and score runs. Another good, solid, competitive game on Saturday. And then a complete and total beatdown on Sunday to wrap it up. Beautiful weather in early March against a team that's highly rated and then turns out to go to Omaha. It was
that place was packed too, Carl.
Yeah, it was. And it was a great
week.
It was just
even
one of those
walk around on the hills. It was everywhere. There was people. That was like the Louisville game too. I should have brought that up.
Yeah.
That was a 3,000, the 3K night. I thought we'd actually get that on Friday with the fireworks and everything. We didn't, but yeah, that Cal State, every game was so crowded. And big crowd games are really exciting. That was I forgot about that. Was that a doubleheader? Was it a doubleheader?
It might have been. Now that I think about it, you're right. It was. It was a Saturday doubleheader and then the Sunday shellacking that IU just destroyed them.
Oh, killed and, them. It was so packed. It was so much fun. Beautiful weather, like you said.
Yep. All right. So now we'll move on to statistics. Cassidy, what do you have for us in the stats department this week?
Let's see. So I kind of went the easy route, and I took a look at some home run numbers. And I, as far as I can tell, for single season home runs for IU from back in 2010. So this Hoosier offense is getting pretty darn close to that. And that 85 number came before they deadened the bats. So that is from the last time that I talked about, which was after I think about 30 games, the home run rate has remained remarkably stable. So almost two per game after 30 games, 1.8, and we're this far into the season. Absolutely bonkers. Closest season to that ever, at 1.3 per game. This absolutely nuts home run hitting. Home run about every 23 plate appearances, which from about 20 once every 21 plate appearances at that 30 game mark. And on the season, about 20% of the hits have been home runs. So don't even look at doubles or triples. 20% of all hits have been home runs. And crunched some numbers this afternoon, and about 40% of the total runs have come from home runs, have been scored by home runs. This is down from the 30-game mark, which is a good thing. It's down from about 45%. Because that, as you're getting closer to that 50% mark, you're just relying entirely too much on home runs for your offense. But it is at 45% of all runs in Big Ten games. And I'm going to look at those, that the Michigan State game, the Penn State game, the Maryland game, where offense just completely disappeared, and say there might be a little bit of over-reliance on the home run in some of those games. But talking about the Big Ten, I went through the other teams as well as IU, and on the season, the Hoosiers have hit about four times as many home runs as they've given up. They've hit 77 home runs on the season. They have given up 19, which is good for a tie with Michigan for the second lowest number of home runs given up by a pitching staff. Six teams in the Big Ten have actually given up more home runs than they've hit, with those teams being Purdue, Michigan State, Northwestern, Rutgers, Maryland, and Nebraska. And poor Purdue, a little bit of little brother there, but Purdue has given up three times as many home runs as they've hit. We've got several guys who have hit more home runs on their own than Purdue has hit all year. And the closest in this category who's hit about 2.5 times as many home runs given up. But when you look at it, so IU has 77 home runs. Michigan is that's a big. And of course, when you lead the country in home runs, you're going to be leading your conference. So those numbers have stayed remarkably consistent so far this year, and I would imagine that they stay consistent the remainder of the year. Carl, what can you tell us about the Big Ten and postseason?
Oh, thank you, Cassidy. I'm going to start out with the Big Ten standings, which, I mean, we're getting into, we now have three weekends left. And this is one of the most interesting Big Ten races that I've seen. I mean, you right now have four teams within two games. You have seven teams within 3.5 games of the lead. So Michigan is a half game up on Indiana, who's a half game up on Nebraska, who is a single game up on Iowa. It has been just fascinating to watch this break down. And I've done some of my typical statistics. I've done the conference RPI rankings, which actually this now favor Michigan. They did favor Iowa until this weekend. Now Michigan's up there. Iowa's at number two. Indiana's at number four. A lot of that is simply because of the way the math works. Three games against Michigan State and Penn State have really depressed both Indiana and Nebraska as far as the strength of schedule goes. And I don't know that that's, you know, entirely indicative because the way the math works out. And I think that'll kind of, it looks to me like that's all going to work itself out, that this isn't an extremely unbalanced schedule. Nobody is missing playing good teams. And part of that is because there are so many good teams in the Big Ten this year. There isn't one dominant team in the Big Ten. There are a couple of bottom dwellers, but there's not one dominant team. And there's also inconsistency in play. You have Indiana, who swept Iowa, who in turn went to Illinois and swept Illinois. You know, who then beat Nebraska in a series. So you have this circular firing squad thing going on in the Big Ten, and it's quite fascinating. Now, even more fascinating was I decided to do an exercise in which I tried to make very conventional picks for the remainder of the series based on home and away, based on how the teams have done so far. And the finals that I came up with were Indiana and Nebraska tying at 17-7 for the Big Ten championship, which was, first of all, Indiana and Nebraska haven't played each other. And I'm pretty sure the tiebreaker for the conference tournament seeding goes to Indiana between those two because of teams they've played in common. But that was a fascinating result to see. And of course, I could be completely wrong because I'm using conventional wisdom, and conventional wisdom really has not played out a ton so far in the Big Ten. So I could be wrong. I could be right, but completely with the wrong games. You know, so that's the Big Ten, and it's going to be, you know, who shows up and plays ball over the next 3 weeks is really going to determine it. It's really a lot of teams' games. Now you look at a more national picture. Not much has really changed for Indiana as far as the needs report goes. We're only looking at 2 to 3 wins to get a top 45 RPI. Indiana's in really, really good shape to get into a regional. It would take a complete and utter disaster collapse to not make it into the postseason for the Hoosiers at this point. A 2-seed RPI is going to require 5 more wins, which is less than half of the remaining games. There's 11 games less, so 5-6 should be enough, given the strength of the teams that's going ahead, in order to get a 2-seed style RPI. It's still going to take close to a table run to get into a hosting RPI situation. That's 10-1 down the stretch against some pretty tough competition. Now, there is, and you hear it from multiple people that believe that if Indiana gets a Big Ten championship, it will not take a 16 RPI to get a host. And if you look at the top 16 teams right now, there's even more evidence to it, because there's a very good chance that 2 or 3 of those teams may end up being sub 500 in their own conferences. The SEC has more balance to it this year. There isn't a couple teams that just everybody's beating up on. You have Missouri playing well. You have Tennessee playing well. So in a year when that happens in the SEC, there's going to be some really, really good teams with sub 500 records. And if the committee follows what they did last year, they punish those teams. And a team that doesn't get to 500 in its conference will probably make the tournament if they're a top 16 RPI like Texas A&M last year, but they're going to do it as a two or a three seed. You know, the question is if it affects two or three SEC teams or maybe even four, is the committee going to change its tune? Any of you that have been following along on iubase.com will note that I am putting out real-time brackets, and those brackets are based on an algorithm that I wrote, and I really wrote that to match what the committee did last year. So it'll be interesting to see that final prediction, if that matches what the committee is going to do this year. But I really think it doesn't really change much. For Indiana to host, they need to win the Big Ten regular season title. They need to finish with an RPI in the very low 20s at the highest. And then they need to not embarrass themselves in the Big Ten tournament. If those three things can happen, we could have temporary bleachers at the BART. But all of those things happening, that's going to require an extremely strong finish. So I would caution that it's not something I would be expecting, but it's something that's interesting to cheer for, and who knows, it could possibly happen. Well, the Hoosiers still lack a major marquee series win, but now the opportunity has presented itself. Josh has the preview of the Illinois series.
Yeah, exactly, Carl. Big time conference matchup this weekend in Champaign, Illinois against the Fighting Illini. Illinois comes in with a 28-14 overall record, tied for fifth in the conference at 8-7. They're 12-1 at home, and as of Monday morning, have an RPI of 20. They got off to a slow conference start at 1-5, but have been on fire since then by going 7-2, including taking last weekend's series at Nebraska. They have two midweek games, one at Southern Illinois on Tuesday and against Indiana State on Wednesday. So hopefully by the end of the week, the pitching might be thinned out, stretched a little bit. Offensively, guys to look out for, senior center fielder Zach Taylor. He's batting .352, and he leads the team with 7 home runs, 29 runs, and he is 15 of 17 in stolen base department. Junior second baseman Michael Massey is batting .340. He leads the team with 52 hits and is the defending Gold Glove Award winner. Senior third baseman Grant Van Scoy is their 7-hole hitter, and he's leading the team in batting average at .357. So as a team, they're hitting, they have three hitting over .340. They bat .284 as a team with 29 home runs and are 47 out of 59 in the stolen base department. Pitching-wise, Friday's starter is fifth-year senior left-handed pitcher Andy Fisher. He's 5-1 with a sub-3 ERA and has 70 strikeouts and 66 innings pitched. Saturday's guy is a junior right-hander Ty Weber. He's 3-1. Another sub-3 ERA at 2.85 in his 53 innings pitched on the season. And Sunday's guy, junior right-hander Cirilla Watson, is 4-1, 3.38 ERA in 56 innings pitched. Their closer is a junior righty, Garrett Acton. He's 2-2 with 14 saves. A 1.90 ERA. He's allowed 7 hits and 23 2/3 innings. With 26 strikeouts and a .099 batting average against. As a team, their ERA is 3.51. They have a .231 batting average against and average 8.5 strikeouts per game. It looks like a strong team, both offensively and on the mound. Should be a good test for the Hoosiers as they try to make a run at this Big Ten title and improve the postseason resume. Hopefully they can cool off the Illini this weekend. Champaign's about a 3-hour drive from Bloomington. Plus, they have free admission to all games. The weather looks outstanding, high 60s to low 70s. So take a nice Saturday or Sunday drive or make a weekend of it and catch the guys on the road. Friday's a 7 p.m. Eastern start, and they've got some promos this week, Bleacher Bum Barbecue. So they've got barbecue out there if anybody's going to make the trip over on Friday. Saturday is, of course, Derby Day. That's a 4 p.m. start. And then Sunday is a 2 p.m. start. That's goat day. They're going to have a petting petting zoo for the kids, so I'm sure Drew and Bo will be looking forward to that on Sunday. Like you said earlier, Carl, this is a big-time weekend for both the conference standing as well as the RPI. This will be the first of seven games on the road for the Hoosiers before playing the Final Four at home to wrap up the 2019 regular season. So that's going to do it for this week's preview. Do you have any final thoughts for us, Carl?
Yes. My final thoughts are about finals. It's finals week. The Indiana baseball team, they are student athletes, and they are in the classrooms taking exams this week. And several of them will be graduating on Saturday while they're, on the road in Illinois. So it's one of those things, one of those sacrifices. You know, they don't get to walk with their class because of what their commitment to baseball. I just wanted to say we at iubase.com, we recognize what these student athletes do, the amount of work that has to go in, both classroom, studying, practicing, playing games, the immense travel, especially the travel in February and March that these guys do, and having to maintain the studies. And so many of them do go on to get their degrees, and it's a huge achievement, and we do want to recognize them. And hopefully we'll have more information to share in those regards later in the week. Well, that will do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CU at the BART and at IUBase17. Please leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. For Cassidy Palmer, Chris Feeney, and Josh Bennett, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.
I'm going back to Indiana now to see my baby in her